Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, January 14th. Ryan Lizza is our guest the first hour for All Things Political, a staff writer for The New Yorker, who's written recently on Hillary Clinton's unexpected victory in the New Hampshire primary and saying that because of the makeup of Iowa and New Hampshire without many minorities, the effect of race and its potential impact on upcoming contests was not there, but he said because of the diversity in the states that are coming up, particularly South Carolina, that's about to change, and it has changed over the weekend. It has changed big time. We're going to be talking about that this hour. He also wrote a very interesting story on that focused on Republican candidate Senator John McCain in the December 17 issue behind the Republicans' anti-immigration frenzy. We'll be welcoming phone calls, and I think we're going to get a ton of them this hour. Race and gender on the agenda here. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. Hi, Ryan. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Boy, did you know what was coming up, huh?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, as a weekly magazine writer, sometimes it's a little tough to predict things. And I wrote that piece on Wednesday, and boy, since then, the race issue has obviously exploded in this campaign.
It sure has. You know, I'm thinking that it's got to make a lot of Democrats, either those who support either of the candidates, a little bit squeamish here. We don't want to have battles about race and gender. This is a historic election because there is a female candidate. There is an African-American candidate. Why play these kinds of politics now? Some Democrats must be saying, stop.
Yeah, I know. It, among a lot of Democrats, you know, what was this great race that was, for the most part, sort of really positive, and these two very attractive candidates to a lot of Democrats, is suddenly it's gotten a little poisonous all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it was probably inevitable. You know, Iowa and New Hampshire are overwhelmingly white, and so there was not a lot of racial politics to play in neither of those states. But once you get into Nevada, which I believe a quarter of the population is Hispanic, and in South Carolina, at least the prediction is that 50% of the electorate that's going to vote in South Carolina on the Democratic side is going to be African American. You know, you have a hard-fought battle with and then you have the additional factor of Obama's race. You know, these things start to come into play.
Yeah. Let me quote here for those who didn't get this and get your response to Robert Johnson, who's the founder of Black Entertainment Television, appearing at a rally with Mrs. Clinton in Columbia, South Carolina over the weekend, saying, "To me, as an African-American, I'm frankly insulted that the Obama campaign would imply that we're so stupid we would think Hillary and Bill Clinton, who've been deeply involved and emotionally involved in black issues since Barack Obama, was doing something in the neighborhood, and I won't say what he was doing, but he said it in the book, when they have been involved." Later he said he was talking about his work as an organizer, which didn't make much sense.
You know, no, it didn't.
That was an incredible thing for the head of the Black Entertainment Television Network to say as an African-American about an African-American candidate, wasn't it?
I thought it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes when, you know, I think Johnson is worth God knows how many hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And when you get some of these sort of big celebrities or extremely wealthy folks who come and introduce you at these events, you know, they're the guys that go off script. They're the most likely to go off script because nobody's going to hand them talking points. You know, so you always have these great moments on the campaign trail. And look, the idea that he was talking about Barack Obama's organizing days is just baffling. Of
right.
course, he wasn't.
Right.
It was an allusion to the minor drug use that Obama, you know, admitted to in his book. You know, even the Clinton campaign, you know, I've emailed with some of the folks on the Clinton campaign, and even they sort of say, you know, well, what are we going to do? He said it. We didn't tell him to say that, but he's, you know, he said what he said.
Yeah, he sure did say what he said. You talk about Hispanic voters and Clinton's advisors arguing that Hillary's firewall would be Hispanic voters in large states like California and New York.
Right.
We're going to get a sense of how well she does here. Tell me how those voters have been courted, if they are Hillary fans, how well she's likely to do, and if it could put her over the top in Nevada.
Well, even before New Hampshire, when it looked likely, or when it looked like a possibility that Hillary could lose Iowa and New Hampshire, her campaign aides were talking about February 5th and the firewall that they've built. and saying that in several states, which will make up the majority of the delegates that are handed out that day, the Hispanic population in a Democratic primary is anywhere from, 5 to 20%, depending on the state. Hillary, if you look at the polls that have come out that test the Hispanic population, she has shown huge advantages in that population over Obama. And even when she was suffering declines among African Americans, among women, Hispanics always held steady for her. And I interviewed one of her pollsters, Sergio Ben Dixon, who he's known in Democratic politics for his focus on the Hispanic electorate. And he on the record explained this whole firewall strategy. He also said since they won New Hampshire, it's less important. And then I asked him, well, what is it about Hispanic voters and Hillary that has created this bond? And he mentioned three things. One, health care is a very important issue to the Hispanic community, and Hillary is sort of identified with that issue positively. Two, she said, it's a part of the electorate we're saying we want to go back to the Clinton era in the 90s. Hmm. Actually, it does really, really well. There's no penalty for saying you want to go back to the past. But the final thing he said, which I thought was the most eyebrow raising, he said, and he pointed out, he said, I want to say this very carefully, but Hispanics have not shown much of an affinity to support a black candidate, which to me was a very surprising thing for a top Clinton advisor to say on the record. Basically, we are counting on Hispanic-black tension to win this race.
Oh, my gosh. Ooh, race is just there in all kinds of ways there, then in very big ways.
Yeah, no, and I think, some people would say, well, he was just making a statement of fact. It is true that there have been statewide races where Hispanics have not shown much of an inclination to vote for black candidates. But I think in the heat of all these racial politics we're experiencing right now, I thought it was a very surprising thing for a top Hillary staffer to say.
Right. Did you make a lot of Clinton's comments about Lyndon Johnson deserving more credit? And I don't even know if you can interpret it this way then.
Yeah.
But it has been interpreted this way than Dr. King for the Civil Rights Act.
I mean, look, my one rule of politics is if you have to go out and meet the press and sit there and say and point out that you do believe that Martin Luther King is a hero,
that
is not a good argument to make, especially as a Democrat.
I see your point.
I mean, really, for anyone, but you've made some mistake.
Right.
That's the politics of it. On the policy, I mean, what they're trying to do is they're trying to undercut. They're trying to point out that Obama is all inspiration or as they put it, all rhetoric and no reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a pretty poor analogy to use and historically inaccurate. I think she really, in a way, at least one interpretation is that she belittled MLK's.
And it didn't make sense because he probably is a hero of hers. I know in one
of
the books,
right,
she heard him speak when she was a young girl in Chicago.
That's right, when she was 14. Yeah, and she said that yesterday on Meet the Press.
Oh, did she?
She did. She pointed that out. But again, anytime you have to remind people that you think MLK is okay, you're not arguing from a position of strength.
Yeah. So what is that doing? What's that doing? I don't know, this is maybe too big a question, but what is it doing to the African American vote? We've heard some displeasure here. Is it going to result in more votes for Obama or what?
I would have to think, look, the Obama campaign, this has been reported, their South Carolina folks are sending out all of these accumulated knocks on him and perceived knocks on African Americans. They're sending that out. They're getting that into the press in South Carolina. This is a huge issue in South Carolina right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but think it's just going to drive African American voters to the polls and increase Obama's support down there. It's kind of shocking watching this and knowing what we know about the Clintons' relationship with the black community all
these years.
To see that sort of come undone, or what
right.
looks like there's just these big cracks, is fascinating.
Right.
And as you said at the beginning, I mean, this is not the race. This is not the kind of campaign we all were expecting to cover all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting ugly. I emailed a friend of mine who works for Clinton the other day. I said, this is starting to look like McCain-Bush in South Carolina in 2000, mm-hmm. that really nasty race.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she said, I don't think it'll get that bad, but you're right. It's sort of we're on the cusp of being pushed over into that kind of really nasty politics.
Yeah, Geraldine Ferraro quoted in today's New York Times. You probably saw the Obama campaign is appealing to their base and their base is the African-American community. What they're trying to do is move voters from Clinton by distorting things. What have they got to lose?
Yeah, I see, and I think the jury's still out on this. The Clinton people are saying Obama's pushing all this. The Obama people are saying, no, these statements have all come from you. Obama has basically been silent until yesterday. And, you know, there are two ways to look at this. One is this is all helpful for Obama in South Carolina. It is, you know, as Geraldine Ferraro says, it's going to help pull black voters from Hillary to Obama. On the other hand, one of the central aspects of the Obama campaign is that he has not run as, quote-unquote, a black candidate.
Yes, right.
Right?
Yeah.
He's run as this sort of post-racial,
right,
sort of, you know, my identity doesn't matter. You know, he has a line he's been using for years. I'm rooted in the African-American community, but I'm not limited by it.
Mm-hmm.
He's really spent most of his political career trying to be seen as sort of post-racial. And, you know, he doesn't want the word black in front of that word candidate. He just wants to be a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and look, there's a reason for that. The country is only 13% African-American. You know, someone who runs strictly on their race is not going to get very far. Running a replay of the Jesse Jackson campaign is not going to get him elected.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are people in the Obama camp that say, no, this is all being pushed by Hillary to sort of box us in as the black candidate. And this is, you know, this is further charge that this is ugly racial politics to sort of, you know, narrow cast him and make it more difficult for him to win.
Yeah.
So those are the two sides of that debate.
Yeah, it's quite something to behold. A few comments on John McCain. I was really interested in your lengthy piece, December 17 issue of The New Yorker on immigration, because you watch those Republican debates and holy Toledo, you think it's the only issue in the country. And as you say, it's way behind other issues in this country, but they've been debating it and debating it and debating it. And they're mad at McCain because of his position on immigration, or are they mad at McCain?
Well, yeah, it's still an issue that stings. And he's had to, you know, the one concession he's had to make is he's had to say, okay, fine. I won't try and do a comprehensive, you know, I've given up on comprehensive immigration reform. You know, now I believe we have to do the border security stuff first. But, you know, on the other hand, he still says he supports the stuff that really angers the Republican right. And that stuff is the worker permit program and putting in place some kind of path to citizenship for illegal immigrants. But I think it's bended the whole Republican primary to the right in a way that's not going to be helpful for them in the general election. And I think some of these guys have misread the Republican electorate or have just don't have enough credibility with folks with conservative voters that they sort of had to do this. You know, remember one of the things that Bush was able to do in 2000 was to sell a pretty progressive immigration vision to a very conservative electorate, or at least temporarily. Obviously, that all fell apart last year. But I think if you look at the polls among Hispanics and Republicans, all the gains that Bush has made since 2000 have disappeared since anti-immigration sentiment has become so widespread in the Republican Party. And so maybe there's a short-term gain for whoever wins the Republican nomination. But in the general election, I think it's a bad issue for Republicans overall.
Yeah.
And the one caveat is, there are some House races where this race will play well for Republicans, and some Democrats are very nervous about it. But overall, if you look at the swing states and some of the emerging swing states, it's an issue that's good for the Democrats' presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Well, I love that quote, and this is typical McCain in some ways. He tries to find common ground, but he's getting pushed on his immigration stance, and he talks about this 80-year-old grandmother whose son and grandson are serving in Iraq. She is here, you know, been living in the country without the right papers probably for 70 years, and the person in the audience wants to see punishment to anybody who's broken the law. McCain says, if you're prepared to send an 80-year-old grandmother who's been here 70 years back to some country, then frankly, you're not quite as compassionate as maybe I am.
That was one of those moments.
Yeah, what a
and
moment.
The poor guy
yeah.
just sat down, and, you know, McCain just sort of moved on to the next question. He gets very emotional sometimes when he talks about this, and when he's told that story of the 80-year-old grandmother a bunch of times, and he always gets very indignant about it. And just one more comment on immigration. It is interesting how it's shifted all of a sudden. I've noticed that Rudy Giuliani, who is sort of following Romney over the edge, really far to the right on immigration, he's shifted recently. And the reason he's shifted is that he's decided that his whole, the make or break state for him is Florida. And in Florida, the immigration issue is much more complicated for a Republican. You have a big Puerto Rican and obviously Cuban population and then many Cubans vote in the Republican primary. Some Puerto Ricans do. And I think he's learned to speak a little bit differently since I wrote that piece about the immigration issue because of the politics of Florida.
Interesting. And Romney, who's been accused, and perhaps rightfully so, when you look at what his stand was on immigration, he now calls it amnesty. He, as you say, once expressed support for comprehensive legislation.
Yeah, and this was exactly, you know, the old Romney, this sort of Bain business consultant who, in some ways, at least on some issues, particularly immigration, comes out of the mold of sort of, you know, the Bush mold, takes the pro-business view of immigration. And when this was being debated, he was asked, and the Boston Press reported that he thought, you know, the Bush-McCain plan was reasonable. But as he got into the primary and he realized that this was such a hot issue for Republicans in Iowa and New Hampshire, he shifted to the right on it and really made it a sort of central to his campaign. And as we've seen, it didn't work.
Right.
He lost both
right.
states.
Right.
But, you know, this is the basic critique of Romney is that, you know, he doesn't see the forest through the trees. He seizes on these issues that he thinks will give him some kind of temporary lift in the polls without looking at what his sort of constantly shifting around will do to his image overall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been one of the problems with his campaign.
Do you think he is facing trouble tomorrow in Michigan?
Well, you know, I think, you know, it's very dangerous to cite polls anymore.
I know.
And it's very dangerous to make predictions anymore. I told someone that I'm not making any more predictions about this campaign after assuring everyone that Obama was going to win New Hampshire, like everyone else. But having said all that, the polls in Michigan show either a tie or Romney ahead by a few points.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, what a whole new take we have on things now.
That's right.
We don't know. The voters will decide, right?
I know. It's strange. The voters have decided that the pundits should not get to call the election.
Exactly. Ryan Lizza is our guest, staff writer for The New Yorker. All things political is what's happening this hour, and we're welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. You can send an email if you'd like as well. And the email address is talk@WPR.org. We're looking at how the issue of race, racial politics, have really surfaced in South Carolina and elsewhere, particularly over the weekend. We're talking about the Michigan primary, which will take place tomorrow, talking about John McCain and Mitt Romney, who are in a close race there, if you can believe the polls, and whatever else you'd like to discuss. Our phone lines are open. 800-486-8655 is the number. John Treader is our inner producer. He'll chat with you for just a moment and then get you on the air. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. It's All Things Political. Ryan Lizza, who is a staff writer for The New Yorker, who's been following the presidential campaigns, and will continue to do so, as only The New Yorker can in their wonderful style. Carol from Mequon. Hello, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi. Great show. I am so pleased. I'm the news junkie, and so I hear all these people on TV. I see them on TV and everything, and WPR always gets the people who are on TV and everything, so you get to talk to them individually. A comment about the Hillary and Barack thing. I am prepared to be the first one in line to vote for Hillary for the nomination, but my preference would definitely be for Obama. I'm an African-American woman, and I actually believe he can do more with inspiration. I think above all, leadership is the most important thing. That's why you have a cabinet of people, of experienced people. And I'm very fearful now, because of the last couple days with all the talk about race, that is going to alienate the white voter away from Obama.
Mm.
So I'm really concerned about that. And I would obviously vote for Hillary, but my preference would be for Obama.
Are you surprised that all this has taken place? Did you hope the Democrats would be above this, Carol?
I sure did. And I was so hopeful for Iowa and New Hampshire.
And
this has come along. And I don't know where it began. And as far as Robert Johnson, I believe his name, from BET.
Yeah.
I mean, BET is, if you look at BET, it's a big moneymaker. But if you've ever turned on BET, you wouldn't take what Robert Johnson says very seriously, because it's a station that really doesn't promote the best in African Americans for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Stay with us, Carol. Ryan may have questions for you as well. Ryan.
Well, you know, I think there's a chance that if you believe that this is a cynical strategy by the Clinton campaign, then you do believe that they're trying to turn off some voters, and maybe white voters, and maybe Hispanic voters in later states. And I don't know. I think the jury's still out on that. But in a hard-fought contest like this, where there are, you know, different pieces of the electorate that they're all vying for, I'm afraid that this was probably inevitable.
Hmm.
I think what you said about BET is very interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I invite anyone who has cable to turn on BET, and then Robert Johnson doesn't hold much water, in my opinion. And I think it's sad, you know, and everyone's taking their sides. Even my kids ask me, I'm an African-American woman, Mom, who are you going to vote for? And they keep asking me as if I'm going to change, because I've always said Obama. Mm-hmm. But they're looking at everything, and they know. And my son, who's almost 17, says, Mom, I don't think a black man has a chance in this country at this point.
Well, you know, and I think that's the other dynamic that's interesting here, and you have to wonder how much of this is purposeful or not. Because I haven't seen the polling on this, but there was a lot of talk early on when everyone was discussing the black electorate, especially in South Carolina, and wondering if Obama was gonna win over African American voters. The talk was, well, a lot of blacks are not going to vote for him because they don't believe he can win, or they don't believe that white voters will support him. And I think the more that this conversation plays into that fear, the worse it is for Obama. That's very unfortunate.
Except that now he's one of the, you know, one of the candidates is a woman and one is an African-American. So he's made it. He's proven himself electable, hasn't he?
I think so. Hey, he won an incredible victory in Iowa with an extremely diverse, not racially diverse for sure, but at least across, you know, the demographics in Iowa as far as income and education, he won and gender, he won a pretty diverse slice of the
right.
Iowa electorate.
Right. Carol, who are your children supporting?
They're definitely supporting Obama, but one of the things that I think doesn't get discussed is that there is this ongoing, I would say, competition between the white woman and the African-American male.
Mm.
Yes.
Idea that promoting a white woman and dealing with the issue of white privilege,
yep,
and saying this is historic in a way. I mean, if you look at, you know, who has succeeded historically, I would definitely say that the white women have. And I do think, you know, I do think it's a little disingenuous to say, hey, you know, we're having this white woman be president, and this is a huge thing. I don't think it's as historic. I just don't, because I do think that a black person has to work hard to get to that point. Whereas a white woman, they break the glass ceiling quite often. I mean, if you look at the universities, who's presidents of universities, all these different places that they have made great progress in, and the black population, or, you know, black leadership is not, even though, I mean, obviously there's some, but not nearly as much. And so I don't see it as such a great thing as people are promoting it, you know. And I think she used her gender, and
so what you're saying is historically black men have suffered more in America than white women.
I think she used the fact that she was a female, and I don't believe that the white voters in New Hampshire said one thing and did another. I believe, you know, it affected a lot of white women that this man, not just a black man, but this man was kind of putting her down, especially the comment he made about, oh, you are likable enough. I think that was a bad idea for him.
I thought it was just funny. We're analyzing things to a sentence, and I didn't find anything offensive in that. I really did think it was just kind of a funny comment, but...
Yeah,
yes, I interpreted it differently.
I thought it was a little
turned off. Yeah, interesting. Well, Carol, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
What a race this is. What a race. The fact remains, though, we've never had a woman president either. And it is, you know, when you look at the race, it is a big thing, Ryan, that these are one of these people will be nominated.
Yeah.
And that is a big thing for this country.
That sometimes gets lost in the mix is the two front runners. I mean, you know, it's tough being a white guy in this race. Democrats, Edwards kid, he's not even in the mix.
Yeah. What did you make of Edwards' comments yesterday in South Carolina? He says, as someone who grew up in the segregated South, I feel an enormous amount of pride when I see the success that Senator Barack Obama is having in the campaign. And he criticized Clinton for the comments about Lyndon Johnson.
I think, and this is going to be very cynical because I'm going to interpret Edwards's comments through, not on the merits, but through the politics of what he's trying to accomplish in
right.
the campaign.
Right, yeah, well, good, that's
and,
all right.
And I think that's, you know, and I think the evidence is that that's the best way to do it when it comes to Edwards. But anyway, he and Barack Obama have the same interest. They want Hillary out of the race. Hmm. The only chance for Edwards right now is for Hillary to be out and for it to narrow to Obama and Edwards. So Edwards has an interest in Obama defeating Hillary and sort of pushing Hillary to the side. And, you know, Edwards is going to do everything he can to sort of stick around and maybe be the last guy standing next to Obama. You know, and that's the best strategy he has. So he's going to sort of defend Obama when he can and sort of criticize and push Hillary back whenever he can. That's the way I interpreted it.
Yeah. But there isn't realistically a chance of the two of them having a race here, is there?
I don't think so. I mean, a lot. She would really have to collapse, and you know, I think he would have to probably beat her in South Carolina, and she'd have to suffer a couple of big defeats in Nevada and South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's highly unlikely that she gets out of the race before the Super Tuesday, and that Edwards sort of emerges
right.
as Obama's main opponent.
Although that was one of the scenarios after Iowa, wasn't it?
I think it was.
I think,
if she had suffered a big defeat in New Hampshire, her people were basically saying they were going to skip Nevada, skip South Carolina.
Hmm.
She would have just sort of looked like a defeated candidate,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the press would have been focusing on these two mm-hmm. early states. Obama would have just sort of building and building as the inevitability really would have built. And it would have the whole dynamic of the race would have changed going into February 5th. Now, look, she's facing two very tough contests anyway. She may lose Nevada and South Carolina. If you had to bet today, you know, you'd probably bet against her just because of the nature of those two contests. You know, in Nevada, it's a caucus,
mm-hmm.
and most of the caucus participants belong to one of a couple of unions. Both of those unions are backing Obama. So if you're a union member, you're going into a public caucus. You got to stand in the corner for your candidate.
Right.
You know, it's not the privacy of a polling booth.
Right.
You got to be there with all your other union buddies, knowing who your union endorsed.
Right.
It's going to be tough to go against your union. You know, normally in a primary, a union endorsement doesn't matter as much because in the privacy of the polling booth, you do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But Obama has a huge institutional advantage there with these union endorsements. And then, of course, in South Carolina, as we've already discussed, the African-American vote is going to be critical.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Carol, for the call. Jim is next from Viroqua. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I have a little different take on this because I travel a lot on business, and I think that aside from their relative merits of Clinton and Obama, there is no way that Hillary Clinton is going to win an election in November. I think that people like Karl Rove didn't retire to go fishing. They're just hoping that Hillary Clinton will be the nominee. And aside from the woman black issue, I think that Obama Edwards ticket would be really unbeatable in the fall. But Hillary Clinton, I see bumper stickers saying anybody but Hillary. People want change in this country from the Bush administration. And I think that if it came down to a Hillary McClain would win. People, there is so much built-in history and hatred among much of the center of the nation here against Hillary Clinton. Aside from the merits of her campaign versus Obama and whether they'd make good presidents or not, Hillary will lose in an election because there is just this baggage.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Ryan?
Well, you know, the Clinton campaign, let me just tell you their response to it, just in fairness to them. And I've seen her talk about this in intimate gatherings with voters, and I think she's saying it more and more. And her view is, hey, people know everything they need to know about me at this point. There's nothing new that Republicans can throw at me in a campaign. And in politics, you're saying that can be an advantage sometime. On the other hand, Barack Obama is fresh and new on the scene, and every new fact that is thrown out there about him, every new negative fact, is going to be something new that will stick in a voter's mind. So she's saying, the negative stuff about me, you know, some people have made up their mind, they're never going to vote for me, fine, but at least there's no more garbage that they can throw at me. So we can have a campaign on the issues, because I'm sort of a known quantity. And, you know, the second part of her spiel on this is a little bit of a fear. You know, be careful by choosing the new fresh guy. You don't know. He hasn't been vetted. There may be something scandalous in his past, and Clinton people suggest that all the time without actually pointing to anything. So that's their political response to that. The Obama people would say, this guy is the Democrats' Ronald Reagan. He has the potential to sort of break open the sort of polarized electorate, bring in a huge number of new independents and even disgruntled Republicans. And then I have to say, in Iowa, they started to prove that that was that may be true. Now in New Hampshire, the results was not as good for them. But anyway, that's the two sides of that debate.
Thanks so much, Jim, for your call. June is next from Shawano. Hi, June.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Ryan.
Hi.
This is a very interesting conversation, and I think to myself often, what if Hillary Clinton was running without Bill?
Yeah.
What if she'd never been married to Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
What if Barack Obama was an Afro-American who had been brought here as a slave, as opposed to his having an African father and American mother.
You mean his ancestors?
Ancestors,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And like Carol, my son, who is black, does not want to vote for Obama because he wants to vote for John Edwards.
Huh.
And it compiles a whole bunch of emotional things. When my niece called me and said she was working for Jesse Jackson and he was going to win, sadly, I said, no, he's not going to win. It was terrible to break the heart of this young woman. And I think of her and the many supporters of Barack Obama because the white people have never known about racism. And racism exists, and black people know about it more than white people.
Yeah.
And when Carol Sun says, I don't think he can win, I can understand where he's coming from. All my life I've wanted to vote for a black candidate or a woman, and here we are with all this mess.
Yeah, here we are. Well, there's a lot in those comments, Ryan.
Yeah, and the caller hit on one aspect of Obama's background that I think has raised questions in the black community and raised this this question that you hear all the time in the press. And, you know, to me, it's a silly question, but maybe there's something to it. You know, the headlines of, you know, is Obama black enough? And a lot of the times, in explaining what that means, people will say, well, like the caller says, he doesn't have an ancestry that is similar to most to the black American experience, right? He didn't have ancestors who were slaves. He didn't have parents who grew up in the Jim Crow South.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have that sort of that common bond. You know, and you know, Obama's book, not to mention the fact that he has a white mom. And in Obama's book, this obviously was one of the sort of central identity crises that he struggled with. I mean, his whole book is about this sort of complicated racial stuff and growing up that way. And I think one of the reasons, and I don't think actually he says this quite clearly in his book, it's one of the reasons he went to the south side of Chicago. You know, Chicago, when he went there, was really the sort of center of black thought in America.
Mm-hmm.
And he went there to work and organize poor black south side Chicagoans. And part of it was, I think he was looking for a more authentic African-American
mm-hmm.
experience. So those issues, I think, are real. And he himself has sort of written about them and struggled with them.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call. Let's pause for a moment. We're talking all things political this hour of the program. Ryan Lizza is our guest, a writer for The New Yorker. We're looking at race and gender in the Democratic primaries and caucuses, and we're looking at Well, we can go beyond the issue of immigration on the Republican side as well. Feel free to join us with your comments about all of these races. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, it's not scheduled every month, but we do a number of programs on alternatives to oil. And we'll be looking at prairie grasses using moderate amounts of fertilizer on marginal land, having the ability to produce significant amounts of ethanol. So we'll be talking about this issue with a professor who has worked in the field of energy and fiber crops and their associated industries for quite some time. All right, more phone calls for our guest, Ryan Lizza, writer for The New Yorker, and we go to Frank from Madison. Hey, Frank.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, gender and race are very important issues, and, you know, they certainly come to the fore in these two people, but I'm not so sure that they aren't major diversions from what is really important. They've been a diversion for 20 years to the sacrifice of any attempt at economic justice. And it's very strange in this campaign at this moment that the economy is not being addressed, how we got to a situation where the economy is and the American economic performance is in such a parlous state, it's not being addressed. And the war, once again, has disappeared. Why is that? Especially when it's clear that there's some mysterious arrival at an elite consensus that America is going to be in Iraq for at least a decade. So I'm not so sure that this fascinating dynamic between these two individuals represent a substantial victory for America in terms of its social and political development is not a distraction. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for the call. Ryan.
Yeah, I think I agree with him. I mean, what did Obama do this weekend? What he really wanted to do this weekend, the news he wanted to make, was about his economic plan. And suddenly the economy is the most important issue to voters on both sides, and there's a general agreement that if we're not in a recession, we may be heading towards one. And he rolled out a big economic plan and really hasn't gotten much coverage at all. All the political coverage has been about this divisive racial issue. I agree with the caller. You know, just covering this race, it's uncomfortable to cover this stuff. And, you know, it's kind of messy and complicated.
Right.
And he's absolutely right. I think the war faded even before this issue of race came into play. And I don't know I think, for one, the economy has started to become a more important issue to a lot of voters. And I think the recent decline in American casualties has pushed it from the headlines a little bit as well. But I agree with the caller in general that this is in a lot of ways a sort of, you know, a sideshow to the other issues.
Yeah.
But a lot of voters, you know, when they hear Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton say what they said, or Robert Johnson, you know, these, you know, race and gender are not insignificant issues to a lot of people. So it catches people's attention.
Well, certainly the Clintons have kept alive the war issue, again, pointing to Obama, the fairy tale comments,
yes.
The fact that, you know, he voted to fund this, that maybe he had a difference of opinion, maybe he thought differently about the war back in whatever the year was. So they've kept it alive in a negative way, certainly.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, arguably, Bill Clinton, when that fairy tale comment, which I think was a very powerful comment in the final days, it you know, we'll never know for sure, but good chance it raised some lingering doubts that people might have had about Obama. And, you know, look, I think factually, Hillary was on Meet the Press yesterday, and she had a long discussion about his war record. And there are a couple of places where I think she was factually incorrect about his war record. They know that basically there would be no reason for Obama to be running for president unless he had that key distinction with Hillary Clinton. He got the biggest issue of the last, you know, 10 years, maybe longer, right. She got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't have that powerful argument, I think it would be a lot harder for him to make a case for his campaign. So they know that's his major strength, and they're now trying to sort of you know, go to the heart of his strength and sort of muddy the water, say, hey, we have the same position on this issue.
It's kind of touchy for her to do that because one of the biggest negatives for her was her vote on the war, and now she's, you know, trying to talk about, well, it wasn't really a vote for the war. It was she's trying to make something different about this and talking about Chuck Hagel and who was drafting this. And she said it was more about urging Hussein to comply with weapons inspections instead of authorizing combat.
Right, which is, you know, look, this is a messy debate, but
right.
There was another resolution in the Congress that was the Levin Amendment. And if you really, really believed that you were not giving George Bush the authority to go to war and that what you really cared about was inspections and getting a second UN resolution, you would have supported the Levin Amendment. Everyone knows that.
Mm-hmm.
The hawks on the war supported the Bush version. The ones that had a few more doubts and wanted inspections to work and wanted to slow things down, they were working with Carl Levin and pushing that amendment. And so I personally think it's a little disingenuous for her to say that, oh, my vote was to get inspections in there. It was a vote to authorize George Bush to go to war. And yes, the Bush administration was promising that they would get the inspectors back in there and they would do everything they could diplomatically and through the UN before they went to war. But the truth is that if you had an alternative in the Levin Amendment and she didn't vote for it.
We have an email, Pat, from Rudolph, Wisconsin. In my opinion, the Hispanic voting community is not a unified voting bloc. There are many cultural groups, Mexican, Cuban, et cetera, that have very different interests. They're not a racial group as such, although they may be seen that way by some in the white community. I don't think any candidate should count on a Hispanic vote. Of course, the Puerto Rican community, since they are U.S. citizens by birth, whether born in Puerto Rico or on the mainland, are not involved in the immigration issue at all.
It's a very good point. And I was careful when I was writing about this not to say that, because the U.S. Census does not say that Hispanics are a separate race, it's an ethnicity. It's a very diverse group.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Cuban-American population historically votes very differently than, say, the Puerto Rican population or the Mexican population. And with all these groups, there's more diversity than we sometimes recognize when we're having these conversations. I will say that the polling shows that across the Hispanic groups, if you take out the Cuban Americans who are more Republican, if you look at like some of the California polls for Hillary, across the different groups within Hispanics writ large, Hillary's numbers hold up about the same across all those different groups.
Mm.
But, you know, these things change with income, with education level. So it's not as he's a very good point to throw into this conversation.
Dorothy from Madison, hi.
Good morning. I would like to know why in this country we keep putting in kings and queens. We've had Bushes. Now we've had Clintons. She helped with Mr. Clinton a good deal. She was sticking her nose in a lot. She's had her turn as far as I'm concerned. I am voting for Obama. I do not understand why the war is not more out there. I heard last week they dropped 40,000 tons of bombs on the insurgents, and I think they missed most of them. That country must be a complete mess. What are we thinking about? I just don't understand. I'm 84 years old, and I guarantee you I'm tired of Bushes and Clintons. I hope Obama can start a new way. And why is it that most people want to vote for the winner? That's the way it is in sports and everything. I've always been for the underdog, and I'll continue to be that way.
Thank you, Dorothy, for your call, Ryan.
I always thought that was one of the more powerful arguments against Hillary Clinton, and that is this sort of the dynastic implications of the Bushes and the Clintons trading the White House for all these years. And Barack Obama, he brings that up, but it's always kind of subtle. I mean, inside his campaign, I know that their theory of the race is that in subtle ways they want to remind voters of the similarities between George W. Bush and Hillary Clinton. I don't think they would say that explicitly because that might, you know, that might anger some Democrats, but I think they do try and point out those similarities. And his argument about getting past the 90s and getting past the debates we've been having over the last 20 years, it sort of gets at the you know, let's just get past the whole Bush-Clinton era. He sometimes kind of lumps the whole group in together, and we just need a clean break from all that. But he doesn't quite come out and say that there's something unhealthy or even undemocratic about these two families having a lock on the White House for so long. And I always thought that that was a very, you know, that raises questions, especially in the minds of a lot of liberal voters. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if the Obama people go there as the campaign continues.
The issues are changing, obviously, from day to day, it seems like. But I can remember some months ago talking about a fatigue factor with both of these families and wondering how that would play in this campaign, that there, you know, it seems logical there would be a fatigue, that we're tired of some, you know, all that went on with the Clinton administration. There was a love-hate thing going on, and that,
yeah,
you know, if Jeb Bush were to be nominated by the Republicans, there's a fatigue factor with that as well. Is that playing out in this election, do you think, Ryan, or not?
Well, I don't, you know, the Clinton people have studied and polled the issue of Clinton fatigue to death, and I think it seems that the evidence is that Bill Clinton, at least in a Democratic primary, does more good than harm.
Mm.
If you look at the returns from New Hampshire, and New Hampshire may be a special place because there's a real positive Clinton nostalgia among Democrats there. You know, that was the state where Bill Clinton sort of, you know, made his big comeback, and it's the state that really launched his career.
Mm-hmm.
He's always had a bond there. And if you look at the exit returns, I believe it was 83% of Democrats, or 83% of people that voted in the Democratic primary had a positive opinion of Bill Clinton.
Oh, my.
So, and, you know, obviously Hillary didn't win 83% of the vote, but she did win a majority of the people who had a positive opinion of Bill Clinton. So that shows that at least in the Democratic primary, you know, he does more good than harm.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Paul from La Crosse. Hi, Paul.
Hi. So to piggyback on what Dorothy just said about following the winner, after she won in New Hampshire, Obama picked up all these red state endorsements,
yeah,
by Democrat McCaskill in Missouri, who was Emily's List, and Emily's List is supporting Hillary. Nelson in South Dakota, Governor Neapolitano, I think that's it.
Yep,
in
Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's more. There's like five or six of them all together. Now, you would think that if the these guys are looking around and saying that if you want to carry my state, we got to have Obama at the head of the ticket,
yes,
because Hillary is not going to carry our state at all. But Obama, yeah, we got a chance there, a very good chance, and we're going to come out and support him right now because that's the thing to do. And I think that was as noteworthy as the primary win, but no one talks about it.
Yeah, I totally agree with the caller. I mean, and it's interesting that all of those endorsements, which I think would have been a big deal in a sort of slower news period, those have gone completely pushed off pushed out of the headlines because of this conversation about race. And look, if you're cynical about this, the Obama camp is pushing these red state, you know, white people endorsements, and meanwhile the Clinton people are trying to sort of box him in as a sort of, you know, as sort of simply a black candidate. I mean, that would be the most cynical interpretation of the battle that's going on. But I think you're right. I think those endorsements mean a lot. Like, I know McCaskill, for instance, she was not thinking about, she was considering running for, I believe, governor in 08. And one of the reasons she was persuaded not to run is because she was told that Hillary Clinton might be on the top of the ticket in 08.
Hmm.
And she probably wouldn't win. Therefore, she decided to run for the Senate instead and won that race.
Huh. Very interesting. Thanks, Paul, very much for the call. Let's go next to Joan from Dunn. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I know I don't have much time. I would encourage, and thank you, I would encourage that all of us who consider ourselves liberal or progressive and want change not be drawn into this divide and conquer strategy. I find the timing very interesting, right before Martin Luther King Day. And, you know, in fact, many abolitionists and many people in the Johnson administration, because they had the power, did assist and making things better for African-American people. And I think we have to all stick together and take a longer view and not just have just not react.
All right, Ryan.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that that's a healthy point. But this is a hard-fought battle with a number of diverse racial and ethnic groups in the battlegrounds ahead, and I think some of this stuff is inevitable. And one final point, you know, where we all talk about the Clinton relationship with the black community, it wasn't always this way. Remember, there were a lot of African Americans that were very skeptical of Bill Clinton back when he ran in 1992. A lot of us remember the famous Sister Soldier moment, where Bill Clinton came before a black audience and criticized a black rapper, and it was a politically calculated move to sort of show that he can tell off one of the important constituencies in the Democratic Party. That angered a lot of African Americans. A lot of African Americans did not support the Clinton's welfare reform package or the crime bill of his first year in office. That changed a lot in the second and towards the end of Bill Clinton's term, where there was this incredible bond that developed, and I think a lot of it was over the investigations of Ken Starr when he really seemed a victim.
We need to go at this point. Ryan, join us again. You're a great guest.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks. Ryan Lizza, writer for The New Yorker, and looking at all things political. There's a lot to look at this week. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls, everybody. News ahead. We'll return with more Monday Conversation.